Hello and welcome to Sleeping Giants, the East Anglian Daily Times and Ipswich Star Sports Podcast. We seem to have been talking about the same things on this podcast for a while now, and unfortunately the 2-1 loss to Birmingham isn't giving us many new topics to discuss. We're not having much joy looking back to the 1-1 draw with Cardiff either. We'll try our best though, and here to look back at those results and forwards to the Wigan game on Saturday is our chief football writer Stuart Watson. Those dissenting voices in the crowd have been getting a bit louder with every disappointing result, haven't they, Stuart?
Yes and no. I think the reactions at the game, certainly at Portman Road, there are the boos, there are the dissenting voices, as you say, but it's not an overwhelming reaction at the end. I think this sort of sense of apathy and frustration has just sort of sunk in for a long time now, and there's just a general sort of funk about the place at the moment that people have got themselves into, and it's gonna take something now really to shake everyone out of it.
Well, we'll look back to the Birmingham result first. Obviously a 2-1 loss there, and Birmingham seemingly doing their own slightly bizarre things by obviously sacking their manager the following day despite the win, but we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about what really went wrong for Ipswich in that match. They managed to score, but of course it wasn't the right result in the end.
Yeah, both the Cardiff and the Birmingham game, Ipswich are just giving themselves mountains to climb at the moment. Now this is going to sound a really silly thing to say, but you know, in both boxes at the moment, it's not going well. Soft, silly errors at the back, game after game. There was a time when we were saying, you know, a goal unlike Ipswich to concede. I don't think we can be saying that anymore, because there was two in the Rotherham game. Bart's dropped the cross in the Cardiff game. A couple of poorly defended corners at Birmingham. So things like that are mounting up in their own box. And just a lack of quality and clinicality in the final third, really. The overall performances haven't been that bad. You never come away saying that was dreadful. That was gutless, that was spineless, people didn't try, they were completely outplayed. You never say that with Ipswich, and we haven't been able to say that, but conceding poor goals, final pass, cross, shot has not been good enough, and ultimately that adds up to bad results, doesn't it?
We were talking in previous podcasts about McGoldrick coming back, Williams becoming available, Teddy Bishop being fit again. That was what we were looking forward to. That was what was supposed to bring the spark, that was supposed to revitalise Ipswich's season. Why hasn't the return of those players done enough to improve the results, do you think?
Well, Teddy Bishop got his chance. He had three starts in a row, and being brutally honest, he didn't take that chance. You could make excuses and say he's not up to full speed, had his injuries and whatnot, but I think he'd been back and available for a little while, and I don't think he did enough to take his chance by the scruff of the neck. Johnny Williams is a harder one to explain. I think we've discussed this before. I think he's been limited to 7 substitute appearances since his return for a third loan spell. I can't work out why he hasn't been used more. Johnny insists he's fit over his ankle injury from the summer. He's ready to start. Nick's reasoning is that he doesn't trust him, essentially, in the middle of a 4-4-2 formation. Doesn't think he covers enough ground and is physical enough to play in a 4-4-2. So, yeah, Bishop, Williams were the two you mentioned. David McGoldrick's obviously been back for a little while now, and I think he's played encouragingly enough without perhaps having the end product as well, which is symptomatic of a lot of players. So they need to change something to mix it up a little bit at the weekend. I'm surprised Mick stuck with the same team as he has done for as long as he has. It's been virtually the same team for the last 4 matches in a row. He's tried to go with 4-4-2. He's tried to have a bit of continuity with his team and hope that would sort itself out. It hasn't, and I think there will be changes both in terms of tactics and personnel at Wigan.
Just sticking on Johnny Williams for a moment, it might be a slightly cynical point of view, but is it possible that Mick's reluctant to play him too much in case he really does excel and Palace activate the recall clause that they've got in January? Is he worried that if he plays too well he might lose him?
No, I don't think he would cut off his nose to spite his face on that side of things. I just think Mick is genuinely of the opinion that he doesn't fit the system that he's been playing. I think when he probably did the loan deal with Johnny, he was expecting to play either a 4-4-1-1 with Williams just off the main striker, or the 4-2-3-1, whatever numbers you want to put on it, and Johnny plays in that number 10 role where he's given a bit of freedom. Can he play in a 4-4-2 through the middle? I can kind of see the argument from Mick. If you're playing against a team that has a three-man midfield and you need, if you have one sort of slightly more lightweight midfielder in a two, you can get very easily overrun. But he's got to try something, because, it's not like they're rocks. Fine if they're being rock solid and they're keeping clean sheets and you don't want to disrupt that. But they're not doing that at the moment. So I think he's got to find some way to get Williams involved more, and it sounds like he probably will.
Well, talking about potential changes, we have a little clip here from today. That's Thursday's press conference with Mick McCarthy, in which he does talk a little bit about trying to get a spark from somewhere, and a little bit about the January transfer window. So just have a listen to this.
But you were looking for a bit of continuity in your team. You were hoping that by sort of sticking with people that would breed something.
Yeah, there was that 4-4-2, being solid, being hard to beat. Grinding results out, have we? We haven't done that.
And you've kind of got to the point now where you give people a chance long enough, and you're at the stage now where you think maybe it needs to just...
We need a spark from somewhere, and if you just keep playing the same team and not getting a result, then I think I'd be bonkers as well.
Yeah. Plans for January is coming ever nearer now, is there? Wheels in motion, you've got various lists behind the scene for different things.
Yeah, we'll just see what happens, see who's available. It's never a great month to do it. It's never a great window.
So there you heard Mick McCarthy talking about needing to find a spark from somewhere, Stuart, in the game against Wigan. Where do you think that spark could come from, and what changes do you think he might make to liven things up a bit?
Well, I think the formation will change, and he's hinted in another part of the press conference that I don't think you heard there. He hinted at sort of returning to a 4-3-3, a 4-2-3-1, whatever number you want to put on it, as I say. But it will essentially be one main striker, and I think he'll have his wingers, Lawrence. I can possibly see Freddie Sears coming in for Grant Ward. Grant Ward has not probably hit the heights that he did earlier in the season. He's been the one that's generally been given the hook sort of in games recently. So I think Freddie might come in and play in that wide role that he was playing in a little bit before. I mean, people were talking about Freddie's lack of goals, but he was weighing in with a fair few assists when he was playing wide, and he certainly doesn't lack for working hard either, does he? So I think it might be sort of Lawrence and Sears just working off of a front man, whether that's Varney or whether he takes Varney, obviously 34 years old, just played Saturday, Tuesday, whether he gives him a bit of a rest and brings Brett Pittman in. He obviously had 10 weeks out with an ankle injury, but he's had a couple of reasonable appearances off the bench, Brett, and I think Brett is probably the most natural goal scorer, most natural finisher at the club, so that's a couple of changes there. And then if he can accommodate Williams, it would be in that little free role, the number 10 role, and then with a couple of holding players behind him, which would be the continuation of Yaskuz and Douglas. Not one that's favoured amongst the fans, I know, at the moment. The other option, if he wanted to take Douglas out at the firing line, would be to get Kevin Brew in there, but he's not been involved a great deal of late. But I certainly can see the players that have been coming off the bench recently, Sears, Pittman, and Williams being involved on Saturday.
Now, Mick, sort of to use a cliche term, gets a bit of a stick for being a bit of a tactical dinosaur, but he has used quite a lot of different tactical formations this season. He's certainly trying to find out what works for him, but at the moment, is it that the players don't fit the systems that he's trying when he's got certain players available, or is it that they're changing perhaps too much and nobody can really get used to a particular system that might work?
You're absolutely right. I think I was sat at the game at one of the games the other week, I can't remember which, and journalist behind me sort of said, "Oh, what formation are Ipswich playing?" to his mate next to him, and he said, "Oh, 4-4-2. Of course it is. It's Mick McCarthy." And he has been labelled with that over the years, and I think traditionally he has always been 4-4-2. But a couple of points I'd make on that: when he's played it in the past, it's not been it's certainly not been a boring 4-4-2. You think back to his Wolves days with Kightley and Jarvis and two flying wingers and getting balls into the box and whatnot. And secondly, you're right, he has tried lots and lots of different formations and tactics since he's been at Ipswich. He hasn't just been a rigid 4-4-2 man. They've tried sort of the 4-3-3 for a while. Couple of experimentations with wing backs, never really stuck with that, but tried different systems. It's hard to put your finger on why it's not working. I think sometimes we get a bit too het up on systems and tactics. I think ultimately at the moment Ipswich problem comes down to, if you're being ultra critical, just the quality of the players. Is the squad as good as we thought it was? I think a big part of it is just confidence and belief, and momentum can go two ways in football. You know, when you're winning and you're riding the crest of a wave, I think success breeds success, and at the moment they've just got themselves in a bit of a funk, and I think maybe that might be just affecting the mindset when they're getting into those good positions. You know, the final cross is being, you know, overhit, or the final pass isn't there, or the shot's not quite right, and they're not organising themselves at corners in the way that they would have done, you know, without thinking in the past. So the hope is that, you know, they get a string, a couple of wins together, and everyone feels a bit better about themselves, and they can kick on from there. But I can't see where sort of back-to-back wins are coming from at the moment, I have to say.
The other thing we heard Mick talking about in the clip we played a little earlier was the January transfer window. Obviously, we've spoken about it before on the podcast when there were a bit of a dearth of attacking options for Mick McCarthy, especially after the departure of Daryl Murphy in the summer. Now that January is only a few weeks away, and it could be quite a crucial time for Ipswich this season, do we think he's got any plan? He said in that clip that it's always a bad month, it's always a bad transfer window if you're really trying to do a deal for various reasons, presumably. But he's known for ages that he's needed a few key men in a few key positions. Do you think there's been work going on behind the scenes to make sure that when January comes, first week or so, first couple of weeks maybe, the targets are chased, brought in, and the business is done as soon as possible?
There's undoubtedly work going on in the background. Nobody waits for the 1st of January to tick around and then suddenly pick up the phone. There'll be all sorts of calls going on between managers, agents, and fans don't want to hear it, but January is not a good time to do business. And I think if you look at all football clubs and look at, you know, deals that have been done, sometimes you get ones that do brilliantly and make a real difference in the second half of the season. Ipswich will look at Marcus Stewart, of course, being a fantastic mid-season addition going back many years. But there's not many clubs that can go out and do brilliant business in January, because I think when you're trying to do deals in January, for whatever reason, you need that player, whether you're trying to fight relegation, whether you're trying to make the difference to get into the playoffs or seal automatic promotion, and selling clubs know that, and the price gets bumped up accordingly. Mick's right in that he says it's difficult to bed in straight away, to hit the ground running mid-season when you come to another club, especially if you don't know or have experience of the rigours of the Championship and what it's all about. It can be a bit of a culture shock to some. So just because the money from Daryl Murphy is there, and we are assured it is there, Ian Milne, the managing director, said as much pretty much the day after Murphy went, that the money's in the pot there. They weren't able to spend it before the August window shut. They tried their best to. Obviously, we reported on a few deals that didn't quite happen, Connor Washington, a few others. So the money is there, but spending it is another thing. How far does it? It's not a full £3 million. Because some of that money then did go towards the Tom Lawrence loan deal, the Johnny Williams loan deal, Leon Best, free transfer, but wages again with him. So it's not just, I don't think it will be Mick, here's £3 million to go out and spend. It will be maybe half of that. And then how far does that money take you in today's game? You know, what can you go out and get for a million and a half pounds that is significantly better than what they've got? So it's going to be difficult. There will be lists. I understand they're having a little look at Ben Marshall as a winger. It's been a long time target up at Blackburn. But it's the domino effect with transfers, isn't it? It's not going to happen in the first week, I don't think. It tends to go down to the wire because everybody else is waiting to see what they can do before they let other players go. So watch this space, I guess.
We've spoken about this before in terms of transfers in January. I asked you a few weeks ago whether you thought that the club, McCarthy, Marcus Evans, might relax their appraisals of players' values in order to get someone in to partially placate the fans, partially obviously just to improve the squad. Do you think now, given what's happened since we last spoke about that, that they might push the envelope a little bit further in terms of what they're willing to spend to make sure they get someone in? I mean, we know Marcus likes Mick as a manager, so it's probably unlikely that what Mick does in this transfer window and then the rest of the season could save his job, but it certainly looks like what happens in this transfer window could save some season ticket renewals in the summer.
Yeah, I think that might be the biggest thing in terms of what might be in the back of Marcus Evans' mind. I guess you're sort of saying, are they going to pay over the odds? What is market value these days? Ian Milne sort of said when they couldn't get a couple of deals over the line in August, he insisted that all of the bids made were market value bids. Now, that's open to debate as to what market value is. Now, football prices seem to sort of spiral out of control year on year. I think the way the league has changed now with the extra TV money and parachute payments and teams like Newcastle and Villa throwing around silly money has probably pushed the price up. Has it priced Ipswich out of the Championship or the top end of the Championship? Yes, it probably has. If that's the case, I think Marcus Evans should come out and address that and explain to the fans, you know, it's a different ball game for us now. This is the market that we're shopping in, and that message needs to come from Marcus. Mick's not prepared to say that because he's never going to... I think anything he ever says about a lack of money, he will see as a slight on his own players. And I think he's so good at man-managing the group he's got and motivating them and making them feel good about themselves. If he's constantly saying, I need more quality, I need more money, it's basically saying the players I've got are not good enough. And that's not the message that he wants to give to his own players. So I can understand that, but there needs to be a bit of clarity, I think, for the fans, because at the moment they can't really understand sort of what market Ipswich are shopping in or what the real realistic ambitions and plans of the club are at the moment.
There we go. We shall wait with bated breath to see what January brings and, of course, see what happens on Saturday at Wigan. That's all for this week's Sleeping Giants. Join us again next week for our final podcast of 2016, when we'll talk about the season so far, the upcoming January transfer window again, the upcoming league matches and, of course, the third round of the FA Cup in the new year. Thanks to Stuart and thanks for listening.